We're going to go over to the town meeting part of our conference, and I really want to ask all the speakers to come up, including the speaker to come and take a seat. And this is the time, I mean, a lot of you have been here before, where we try to discuss various issues having to do with education in our schools, as well as education at the KITP and our efforts. There are a few things I'd like to bring up that we might talk about, but then we're going to simply open the floor to you and to mutual discussion. One of them has to do with this experiment that we're trying now and our growing capabilities with the internet and mass communication. And we're thinking about a variety of things, and would certainly like your input into what would be valuable and perhaps your help. One of the things that a lot of people have mentioned is that the proceedings of this and other activities that we do at the KITP are on the web, but not necessarily in a totally user-friendly fashion. And it would be nice to get suggestions, or maybe even help, about how to improve those and make them more accessible to students, schools around the country. The other issue has to do with something like this experiment that we carried out today with a group of teachers in Hawaii. The technology is now developing to a point where we could imagine doing this, you know, simultaneously with a whole bunch of places throughout the country. And the question is, you know, do you think there would be interest? Do you think there would be teachers in your locale who might not come here, it's a long way, but might take advantage of this, and so on? So we're interested in your reaction to those efforts. Could you get, for example, 20 students in X place that has access to some kind of... And if this comes up, maybe our director of communications, Kevin, over there, could describe the technology and what it would take to connect to us. But in any case, that's a subject we might discuss. A third topic has to do with some remarks that some of you have made that I was reminded of, that some of you might be interested in prolonging this experience beyond one day. We've talked about that before in various contexts, about whether we should include some kind of educational, some kind of component of this meeting where we go into educational issues. And by and large, the reaction we got from all of you was, now we get too much of that anyway, do what you do best, that's what's really good about this particular format. And we sort of agree, but I gather that some of you are interested in adding a second day or part of a second day to this meeting, you're already out here, in which, for the purpose of interacting with each other and potentially developing learning from each other about how to interact with your students, develop curricula, and so on. And so I have been asked, and I think it's a great idea, to ask you what you all think about adding an extra, say, half a day, say tomorrow morning, Sunday morning, which would not have talks, would not be in this format, but rather would be run by the participants themselves. Since we are not experts on, you know, education. But so it would be more of the participants would interact with themselves and try to teach themselves or give advice to each other and share experiences. So the question, I guess, is multiple. Is there a lot of interest in something like that? Number one, and would some of you be willing to organize and participate in something like that, coordinate it? So I'm interested in the reaction and volunteers and input. I remind you that we hand out a questionnaire, which I urge everyone to fill out, if only for our desire to show the NSF.
Actually, David, Sue asked me to ask only those who really enjoyed this particular one to fill out the questionnaire.
Well, only those who want to get invited again. Let's put it. But, you know, there are many reasons. We definitely want the input. We want the feedback. We want to tell our sponsors about, you know, they like us to, what, especially what you think the results of this are in some, in any measurable way would be best. But anyways, we're very interested in that, so please take the trouble to fill it out. It's only one page. You go through this with your students all the time, so you should understand what it's like to be on the other end of the... Okay, so that's all I have to say, those three issues. There are others that will come up. I ask whoever wants to raise an issue or respond to any of those, ask a question of any of the speakers, to go to the microphone.
Which you have.
Which I have. This is the only microphone?
No, we...
What?
Two. One question.
That's it.
And then this one. By the way, the questionnaires can be put in a box which is in the front hallway.
Cheryl wanted to raise an important issue on a totally different matter.
We have run into the difficulty, I think, at certain points with certain school board members about even bringing up the idea of the Big Bang. And I want to know where you think this is going and what kind of things we should do so that we can truthfully educate our students. Yes.
Well, as some of you know, I've been actively involved in such a number of issues around the country. In my state of Ohio right now, there's a potential movement. The Ohio State School Board is now considering revising the science standards, and the issue has come up about whether intelligent design should be introduced as an alternative to evolution in the science classroom. You may ask what intelligent design is. The answer is no one knows, but it's a real problem. And in fact, at the same time, often the same people who are advocating, it's a version of creationism that isn't yet been shown or ruled by the Supreme Court to be religion, and therefore is trying to be introduced. But at the same time, those same people are in fact arguing against introducing the age of the Earth in a number of cases and cosmology. It's a real problem. I believe what I've seen in both Kansas and Ohio and a number of other places is that this is not a large grassroots movement. It is usually organized by one or two people who often manage to get on the school board. And so there are a number of things that I think can be done. In both Ohio and Kansas, one of the good responses that I'm very excited about is that it's been, in response, a number of grassroots movements have been organized. In Kansas and Ohio, groups called the Kansas Citizens for Science, and Ohio, similar groups have been organized. I would hope that you all, as really active members of the community, would be prepared, in fact, to first of all organize such movements or work with people at your local universities to get together to organize groups to actively be able to promote science in the classroom, and to also work to encourage your colleagues in the universities and yourselves to get out into the community. I think that's the biggest single issue, and it's the biggest area where scientists in particular, I think, are at fault, or at least most of my colleagues are, and maybe many of you, but I think you're braver than my colleagues, and are afraid to go into the community because they kind of feel that they're exposing themselves to potential ridicule and may not be able to, they may not be able to respond to a lot of the issues that are raised. And the answer to that is the only way you learn how is by continuing to do it. But I think you have to realize that a lot of these people are not being exposed after school and on weekends and to science. They're being exposed to, in some cases, rigorous fundamentalist doctrine every single week in their local churches. And I think that people, like high school teachers, have to be prepared to speak in churches and speak in community forums. And really, as I said at the very beginning, I think you're the first line of defense. You have to be vocal, and you have to be prepared to combat the school board when necessary. And I also think some of you have to be prepared to run on school boards. The best thing we can do, I think, locally, is get competent individuals on school boards. Because it's amazing how one or two people, in Ohio there are 20 people on the school board, 10 of whom are nominated by the governor and 10 of whom run, and therefore four or five people can have a tremendous influence. And the great news, of course, in Kansas was that after this happened, people realized this, and the people responsible for moving evolution from the curriculum there were removed from the school board in the next election. And I've been advocating similar things in Ohio. But I think I've been amazed, and I don't know how many of you have these problems in your school districts, but in areas where I've talked to schools that I thought would be quote-unquote enlightened, how people have come up to me and said, well, I'm surprised you use the word evolution, because we're not, we're supposed to qualify it when we use the when we say evolution. It's a growing problem, and I think it's frankly getting worse. There are groups that are strongly organized, and every time something happens in a state like Ohio, it will be used in your state. If you think it's okay, it's just those backwoods people in Ohio that are having the problem, it's not, because what happens is, even if they lose, and I honestly believe at this point that it's quite likely that intelligent design will not be introduced. I'm certainly working very hard to make sure that right now there's a compromise proposal that it be introduced in social studies. And I'm arguing that we shouldn't do that to social studies. But every time it's used, in your state when the debate comes up, it'll say, in Ohio they seriously considered this and came very close to doing it. I mean, every step. And you can look on the web. There's a well-defined plan to try it's called the wedge strategy, to make a wedge in each state to push to the next state. But I think the only way we can combat this is to both run on school boards and be prepared to go out into the community. Now, you're much closer to the community than many of the people in universities, but you have to. So you're there to be able to do it. But I think the best plan is to try and build partnerships with colleagues at universities to get people out in the community, out in the churches, to talk about science. And most important, and I found this when I talk at a number of, I've gone to fundamentalist schools and talked, the big thing that's being pushed is that somehow a belief in evolution or belief in the Big Bang is tantamount to not believing in God. And what you have to convince people is that believing in the results of science is not a threat to people's religious beliefs, but that's what's being promoted. And if you can convince students, they're shocked to discover that they're so allowed to believe in God, even if they believe in evolution or the Big Bang. Then if you could just do that, you'll have really made an impact on young people. Right?
I'm just interested in how many of you have, for how many of you this is a problem or an issue. Wow. You're from Kansas?
Sorry.
Do you want to make a comment about?
The rules are made by those that show up. So go to the polls, show up, make the rules.
Does anyone else want to comment about this issue?
I have a comment to make. I think, obviously, there are large exceptions to this, but I think both sides on the issue. What both sides are against is dogmatism, and I have friends of mine that I know that are creationists, and they don't object to evolution being taught. They just object to creationism not being taught as an alternative. And I think if we can just agree to put everything on the table and let the students know the facts, that's my opinion. Well,
I don't, in my community, the problem isn't so much with our school board yet, although I anticipate that happening with what happened in Georgia a couple weeks ago.
Should identify with.
In Georgia, the Cobb County School Board, which is the second largest school district in the state of Georgia, basically said that you can teach other forms of how life began, not other forms, other ideas about how life began, to give them a balanced view. So that could be creationism by, pick your religion, creationism, anything. So I would get a 250 religion list of all the different creation myths and say, here you go, have at it. That would be my approach to it, and say, that's all I know about it now. I think what I attack, I don't want to say attack, although I feel like doing it sometimes. What I say, and I teach in a fairly religiously conservative community, and with the E word, and I, instead of running away from it, I embrace it. And I tell them it is not, I am not trying to, we know things in science a different way than we know things in religion. That's the difference. I teach them the philosophy of science. And I said, I tell them the bottom line is, if you can design an experiment to me that falsifies the existence of God, we can teach it in science classroom. And then I ask them, how many of you would believe that experiment? If I told you I have definitive evidence that God does not exist, would you believe it? They say, no. And I go, why? I say, why? Because that's my faith. And I go, you hit the nail right on the head. It's your faith. It has nothing to do with evidence. And I had a kid who jumped up at me and screamed, but you can't prove that God doesn't exist. And I went, bingo. You hit the nail right on the head. That's why.
I don't want to monopolize this, but let me just add one thing, because you hit the nail on the head. But the big problem is, and again, I've written a fair amount about this on my website. You can see op-eds I've written for the Time, New York Times, and other things. What is scarier to me is that what is being requested now is that we change what we mean by science. That the big, in fact, when I was in the debate in Columbus, which was heavily reported around the country, I basically said these people are not doing science, and I explained why. And what surprised me is that they said, yes, we agree, but what you call science is not appropriate. We should not be teaching things that are based on evidence and experiment are not appropriate. We should be expanding the idea of science. And so it is very, very important that we defend that what this really is an attack on science itself, not just an attack on evolution, not an attack on the Big Bang, but an attack on science. And therefore, trying to introduce an attack on science in the science classroom is, at best, inappropriate. Anyway, again, I don't want to talk too much. I've thought
science
about this a lot.
Often an attack on religion is a problem.
It often is, and a lot of people view it as that. And
that's why they're just as mad as you are, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's important, you'll all experience this, that in these discussions that one be as courteous as possible. But also, as I've written, it's very important, the problem of introducing different ideas, as you say, making it sounds like it's balanced. But as I've written, science isn't balanced. And I would also warn people about getting into debates, because the problem is that just by being on the stage, it adds a certain level of credibility to certain ideas, and it's a big issue, and it's a big problem. But you'll often find that the very first thing that people want is a debate, because just by being on the stage, it automatically gives credibility, and people say, well, you say this, they say that. And what I've tried to do, and again, I've written about this in the Times, I say if it was a proper debate, there'd be me and 10,000 scientists next to me saying one thing, and there'd be some fringe group from Seattle saying another. And anyway.
I can only speak from a California perspective. In my point of view, we're lucky we don't have to deal with this issue of evolution. In California, we teachers are accountable, and I think it's great. But the problem that I see is, how can we make the school administrators accountable, because they take the decision that affect thousands, millions of teachers, and we just do what they ask us to do. The problem, as I see it, is people with no scientific background, say business people, lawyers, with political ambitions, get or run the schools. And that is what concerns me. What can we do? We scientists or interested in science teaching to have a voice and make a difference, a real difference.
Okay, I have a feeling we could go on this subject for quite a while. So maybe I would hope we can talk about some of the other things.
I'll just take a crack at that, having been on both sides. I teach here now, but I taught in the Oxnard High School District in California for 10 years. So as you said, we're lucky that scientific method is part of the standards, the science frameworks in California. I don't know what I would do in a state where it wasn't part of the science frameworks. But what I did in teaching was, first of all, I was a department chair for 4.5 years, and I was on the district curriculum committees, and I developed courses. So I wrote an astronomy course, which is adopted as a college entrance science requirement, fulfilling what they call the D requirement. So if you're in California, you can adopt that course. It's on the books in Sacramento, and ask me how. Okay, that's first of all. And I also wrote a course for ninth graders in physical science. So the way I combated that, because it's still rampant, and Camarillo is a very conservative community. And of course, on the one hand, I never, of course, attack anybody's faith. But what I would tell students is, yes, I believe in God, and one of the things that excites me is that we have our way of understanding the material energy, and you know, people who study religion have another way of understanding the same questions. We're all trying to understand the same questions of where we came from. So we're not seeing anything that's mutually exclusive, we're just looking at it in a different way. That's one thing. And the second thing is to get students from the ninth grade to understand what is a theory. Because one of the things that they always say, oh, just a theory. You know, evolution, oh, it's just a theory. And I say, no, a theory means a model. A theory means a set of rules that explain what you have observed for a long time and allow you to predict future behavior. A theory can change if there's new evidence. So something becomes a theory after it's tested for, you know, many, many years. So, Big Bang is a theory, but it is a working model. And so then I start with experimentation and blah, blah, blah.
I do think we want to change the subject and get on to what we're doing here. Is that what you want to ask about? Okay. So what I'm really interested in, again, I remind you, are suggestions for change, improvement.
I'm probably loud enough. I want to ask Dan, how reliable is your equipment in the bottom of the mine in Minnesota? I mean, does No. I mean, just the mechanics of it. Does it work? Does it? Do you? You know, what's your? Now, please don't misunderstand me. I'm, you know, as a mechanic, you know, that's basically what I am. Does the stuff work all the time, or are there times when it breaks down and it doesn't work? And, you know, how difficult is it to maintain the detectability of these parts?
Man, watch me answer very quickly. We're not okay. Let's talk after.
Okay, let me ask you a question, and you can also, you don't have to do this, but I want to know, one of the things when I was asked to do this, I realized you're kind of passive, which is fine, it's all, we can come up here and entertain you, but one of the things I would be wondering that you might want to not mention now, but write in your evaluations is, to what extent you might like to have a more active role? Would you like some time to be devoted to maybe doing projects or mini exercises to get you a little more active and less passive? Maybe you hate the idea, but anyway, it's something I would like to think know myself.
One I attended last year with string theory, and one of the things I would like would be either the entire lecture series on videotape or on a CD or some way where I could use that in the classroom, because I did use it within a workshop context, but I don't know how much is on your website. Everything is there? I checked it and I didn't see anything in terms of the whole video, whole thing can be downloaded from there. Okay, well, that's good.
But it's also possible that we could, with some effort and some cost, put it on CDs that would be available. How many of you have found the website facilities useful? Raise your hand. So that's more than half the audience. How many of you used any of the material from the websites with students? Again, more than half the audience. So it's certainly possible. Did you find it technically? Are there technical suggestions that you can make? Some of them can be made on the program suggestion sheet. We just need input.
You're interested in whether or not we could video conference, and I find that in some school boards, money for that might be a little bit short. We're very lucky in my school system in that we have computers throughout the entire school district. However, some of the technology that would go along with that, like video conferencing, is lacking. So I think a lot of school districts might have difficulty just with the implementation of that from monetary standpoints.
One thing I can say is that I'm part of the Internet 2 community, and one of the big pushes in the Internet 2 right now is to connect, for example, Hawaii. All the high schools are now linked into their high-speed network. So I'm not saying that in every particular school around the country that's going to be the case, but it is the case that there's a big push on. Right now in California, there's a Digital California project to link all the high schools in. So there is the bandwidth, and in most cases, the technology is very trivial. It's really, we're talking about desktop technology. So what we're using here is not that expensive. It's really a question of just getting the bandwidth from end to end. And so it is, technically it is quite possible. Mostly it's a question of getting the logistics together and organizing this kind of event. Sorry? Well, the card that goes into this PC is, we bought it for around $700. I think today you can buy it for $600. And the bandwidth is really the critical factor, because otherwise it gets very broken up and looks very bad. The bandwidth, really, all you have to do is work with your network administrators to make sure that you have a good clean path directly to the switch, and it's 100 base T rather than 10 base T shared. So it's a dedicated connection. That's it's not really the last mile, it's the last inch now.
I would like to suggest that this conference align itself with the College of Education or the Education Department, and anybody that participates that is interested could perhaps opt for a credit or two and write some curriculum that goes with the conference, and that could be made available either on the web or in printed form for people after it's all completed. I don't know if there'd be support for that or not.
I'm not sure I understood the suggestion that we'd be a lot work together with the College of Education locally on campus.
Yeah, I don't know if there's one here at UCSB or
I know. That's come up. By and large, people didn't think that was an important part of it.
As far as adding a half day or an extra time, one thing that I attended the astronomy conference here at UCSB this past summer, and one of the things that was done was have each teacher bring a lesson plan and just present it in a short time frame. If maybe prior knowledge of the topics was done and people could utilize that time presenting short lesson plans and then have handout material for those to take back with them.
One thing that makes this conference so unique is that we have a chance to hear from natural scientists and
And I think that any change away from that, I would certainly be against. And even the Sunday session, you know, I was, when you first mentioned that, I was excited because I'd love to hear some more lectures. And that's really what I'm most excited about. The one problem with the Sunday morning for people that have to travel distances, it makes the travel plans a little more difficult. But if we did do it, I would like to have some more lectures. So thanks.
Dr. Gross, I've been to four of these meetings, and every year you go, well, how can we get more people show up? And our table, before Professor Krauss came to sit with us, we were talking together, and we said that unanimously, we love the opportunity to come here, and we hope that we cannot get more people here, because it is nice to be able to actually talk with the individuals and not have to fight for just a second to get in, you know, for some clarification. The luncheon, this is my opinion here, is phenomenal. You didn't have to return. Any money or anything. I mean, I would pay whatever it takes to have the opportunity to come here just to be able to sit down and talk to the people here. The food is great. I mean, don't get rid of the food. I love the food. But the opportunity to talk to the people is what makes this very special. So, I mean, while I wish you the best in getting a whole bunch of more people to come, I hope you're not too successful in the future.
I wasn't talking about getting more people here. We've had lots of requests over the years to bring in students. And people have suggested that this would be wonderful for our students. And we can imagine doing that over the internet. The fact that these people, a few people in Hawaii were watching them, didn't interfere with that
That's my point.
But is this something that you are there and you have a student? Is something that you could imagine or get telling, you know, you're coming out here and you're saying, too bad, I'm sorry I can't bring you all with me, but I've talked to somebody over the university and I'm arranging so that you can see the same lectures that I'm in.
Yeah, I have the microphone here, so I'll just hog it for a minute. I just want to echo what people have already said, that one of the reasons we come here is we want the inspiration. Don't make us feel that we're just being passive sitting to your lectures. We spend a lot of time in classrooms and in the trenches, and we spend a lot of time thinking about education and being concerned about those issues. We no longer get enough time being exposed to ideas that challenge us, take us a little bit further. We leave here inspired, and that's what we come for. And the thing that works least well in this conference for me, and this is the second one I've attended, is the town hall where you try and get us to want something else.
You must know this or
John. But this forum could be used as a chance for us to talk about the content of the conference, and it would be very stimulating. I feel like I'm in an evaluation session right now.
I've got another microphone, so I'm jumping in. Okay. Lawrence had mentioned that, you know, the rumor was we were kind of passive, and well, you know, to some extent it is, but that's because it's TMI. It's too much information at times. I mean, I know the last string theory conference, it was like 3 weeks before I finally figured out what the hell they were all talking about. And, you know, at times, that's what we're here for. When I hear a new idea, it takes me a little while to kind of mentally, you know, percolate through to a point where I can then bring it to my students, which, of course, inspires them, I hope, to study these kinds of ideas. And so to simply say, well, let's do some projects and stuff, oh, stay away from that. I see enough of that, yeah. MSTA and those things. My preference is to sit, listen, absorb, talk to my peers about what we're hearing, talk to the people who are giving the speeches and the lectures in the beginning, because that's what really brings us together.
Yeah. More substance.
Thank you. As far as watching this on videotape, it would put me to sleep. There is something about seeing people live, and I just can't imagine spending time in front of a screen watching it. And I can't imagine my students doing it either. But what I can imagine them doing, I happen to be involved in robotics competitions. They have a course through NASA and some university to offer the students one semester or one credit for college. And they work on their own 5 to 6, watching a lecture each night. And then they have a chat somehow or other. And it's a 4-week, twice a week. And I have students actually doing that, and they paid to do that. So you might be able to package these with a moderator afterwards, bringing out some of the good points.
David, I've been reminded that the time is such that do you want to go on a little? Okay, good. Okay. You're the last.
One of the things that I look forward to is speaking with one-on-one with the presenters. Possibly if you had a second session, you know, on a Sunday morning or something like that, the people who would have to leave would leave, and the people who could fit it into a schedule could remain and maybe have small groups with the presenters, or in some way, or somewhat of a more intimate setting in which ideas can be, you know, bounced back and forth. I know lunchtime is great for that.
I'd second that in a number of ways. I have to tell you that I'm pleased to see that you enjoy talking to us, but I actually think not only do we enjoy talking to you, but I really believe that most of my colleagues could really benefit from talking more to high school teachers, because it's only that way that people get a sense of what you want and what are the issues that you're trying to get across. So I think it's very useful for the scientists as well. And so I'd really recommend it's mutually beneficial. We get as much from you as vice versa, I really think.
I was just wondering too whether it's possible to have a kind of pre-planning session before the conference starts, in which selected number of teachers can have time with the prospective presenters and probably help in developing kind of possible format, you know, which they bring their knowledge of how they teach in the classroom to what kind of information will be very poignant to the students in the classroom from what the presenters will be presenting. And then we can have a package on this and give to individual teachers that come here to take with them.
The subject of Sunday comes up, and I know that we sit here, and part of the reason we like to sit here is because we learn a lot. And then we hear all this stuff, and it takes a while for it to percolate, and probably Sunday, as you ask about talking to us, we'd have a chance to sit and think and try and figure out what it was we heard and then come up with questions, because I'm sitting here trying to come up with questions, but it's got to percolate a bit before I can have any questions that are worth asking. So that's where Sunday might be interesting.
As far as carrying this back somewhere, I think that most of us probably teach in something like 4 to 5 at max sort of curriculum models. There's an APC course, there's an APB course, blah, blah, blah. In any particular conference where you're presenting a certain set of ideas, if it's going to come back and actually go into the curriculum, it's going to get inserted at some point in those fairly standard models. And so, I mean, the first problem that any of us have to solve is sort of where to stick it in. And so, if we were going to have a discussion amongst ourselves about that, or in some sort, without actually going into the whole curriculum development, let's do a whole module, blah, 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 which is probably too time intensive, I think, for anybody here. Just knowing, having some good first approximations for sort of where to do those insertions is a good starting point for us to carry it back. And either we can sort of help determine that by some discussion discussion with the folks who bring the ideas, or before, pre or post or during, I'm not sure. But I am sure that that's sort of the vector here to get it into the curriculum if you want to get it in. The other thing is video conferencing, internet too, no problem. I think it's moving into some of the schools already. My school, we could have video conferenced this on a week's notice. And I think that technology is coming in, so that's easy to do. Done it? Yeah, I could have gotten you 100 kids, or 50 kids, or 30, or 20, or however many you wanted. Yeah.
Let me say also, I'm not so sure that necessarily inserting in the curriculum, I mean, these things take a long time, especially if we're talking about forefront science topics. I'm not sure they all should be in the curriculum. But what I hope that, at least in my own idea when I came here, that you gain from this is that part of being a good teacher is sort of, A, being excited. And you need to be excited, re-excited continually. And I think it's hard when you're in the classroom all the time to maintain that level of excitement. So I hope that something like this gets you motivated. But also, I think the other interesting thing is to introduce anecdotal things in your classroom. In the middle of talking about Newton's laws, you can talk about dark matter. I mean, it's what I do when I try and teach. And so I hope that, you know, this doesn't have to be curricular, but this gives you tools and some little bit of anecdotal ideas that you can then use to spice up your own lectures on basic material. So
I just wanted to add to that, I mean, it's important for your students to see that science isn't a finished topic, right? There are all these open questions, and we don't have all the answers yet, and boy, we could sure use their help, by the way. You know,
and so. It's an adventure. We have a question from Hawaii. Hawaii. Go ahead.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hello. Oh, I'm Lucretia Leong, and I work for the Department of Education here in Hawaii, and we want to thank you for bringing this video conference to Hawaii. And basically, we just have one comment, and we think we have a e-school program here, and I can see the possibilities of something like this for our students, integrating our courses here with some of these sessions. And I saw a lot of possibility today. We had a few science teachers, a principal, and here today. And what I'd like to say on a personal note also, I'd like to end, is that I was telling my son, who's a physics graduate at Northwestern, I was talking at a video and they were beaming in from Santa Barbara, and he told me, oh yes, both Dr. Krauss, and he also knows Dr. Ackerid. So it is a small world, and thank you again for letting us participate from Hawaii.
Well, if you have ideas about how to use this material, I'm sure you'll contact us. And thanks. We're being pushed to be on schedule. Now, of course, if we actually were on schedule, it'd be the first time in 4 years. So I don't want to break a long tradition. Are there any other really important things? Okay, I'll leave it to your judgment.
Apart from conferences that's arranged here, is it possible that we have also another kind of relationship that teachers and students might have questions, and can we have a kind of through internet question and answer with ITP through the year?
Well, I certainly can't commit my colleagues. People do that all the time. I got an email a few weeks ago from a student. I was really surprised, a high school student who was trying to finish his homework. And it was an E&M problem. And and then I discovered that all my colleagues had gotten this too, and hundreds of people throughout the country. And he was a very clever student. He figured if he sent it to 1,000 physicists, where he got the mailing list, who knows, but not hard to get. He might get one person who would do his homework for him, and maybe he did. So we actually get a whole lot of this. And I certainly can't commit the institute or my colleagues. It would be time-consuming. You know, one of the reasons this forum works so well and is that we get these incredibly talented, wonderful people who are very busy, and they are here doing our program, so we can lean on them, and they really want to interact with you guys because we have enormous respect for high school teachers. We really do, because we know we've heard how difficult a job it is from our kids. And so they're willing to serve, but we can't ask too much of them. So, I mean, you're very, one of the reasons you like this so much is you get to interact with some of the top scientists in the world. But, and we've managed to do that by doing it sort of marginally, you know. This whole effort is financed with a very small addition to our normal grant from the NSF, to which we owe much thanks. But it's a marginal effort, right? Which is why we can afford to do it. So we're not able to expand this enormously without totally changing the nature of our operation. Another very important question back there. Ah, well, it hasn't been settled yet, has it? So actually, I would be interested in input from you all, what you'd like. And you can send suggestions. You know what our programs are, they're on the web, and we could try to coordinate something around one of them or around anything else. So, hasn't yet been decided. But suggestions are welcome. Here is one of our more.
As neither a teacher or a scientist, I must say that all of you did an absolutely outstanding job of conveying concepts and ideas to the group today. But you conveyed one thing that I wish we could find an efficient way to get into the students in the classroom, and that's the zeal and excitement that you show in making the presentation. I can't forget, John Grunsfeld said last night that he knew he wanted to be an astronaut at the age of 6 or 7 years old. And somehow I wish we could get the excitement that comes out of your presentations to the students so that somehow we ignite that curiosity and that desire for learning that moves them into becoming the scientists of the future.
Well, the way to do that for all of you who are excited to convey that to your students. I think it's just to remember that you're excited, and that's the biggest, and that's the most important thing you can do.
Okay, on that exciting note.
Two organizational things.
One is, I've been told, although you probably could have guessed this, that even though we're running late, we're not going to cut into the final talk. It will go on for the appropriate length of time, and the conference will be extended appropriately. The second thing is, while we're about to go out, I understand, for refreshments, the very first thing that will be done is a group photograph, which will be done from above somewhere. So when you go out, before you get your refreshments, apparently, we get together for a group photograph. Right outside the door. Okay, great.